Well, I'll let the two of you discuss this privately.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 22, and the winner is... That's it. That's all there is to the title. Now, here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara Dave.
The winner is us for having awesome listeners and for having awesome Patreon supporters. Speaking of that, again with this episode 44, how'd we do that? I don't know. Drops April 23rd. Let's watch Shannen Doherty in Gone in the Night, part one. A little crossing of the Bunsey content streams here with this two-part CBS TV movie from 1996, starring Shando as Cindy Dawalaby. We love to say Dawalaby. Enjoy. Whose daughter Jacqueline disappeared from her bed one night, only to be found a few days later. Is Cindy involved? Is her husband Kevin Dillon or David involved? Does the first half of the story serve as an inadvertent exhibit A for defunding the police?
Spoiler, well, yes.
I don't mention that for no reason. Join us at patreon.com/againwiththis to find out the answers to all of this and less. The film is on Amazon Prime or IMDb TV, which same difference, except yep. It has ads. If you don't feel like dealing with ads, I feel that you can rent the first half for one American dollar.
Yes. I watched the ads. It wasn't bad. The funny thing was seeing the Tostitos ads and then having them come with a frame around them and be like, order Tostitos at Amazon. Like, all right. Anyway, enough about Tostitos. Let's get into this episode.
For now.
Right. Starting with our B plot, Skipper gets between Barbie and Ken. This is a Sydney /Jane/Jake plot. Duh. No. At Shooters, Sydney drops her lunch receipts with Jake. After some small talk, he very formally states that he and Jane have decided to start seeing each other, and Sydney sarcastically says she figured that one out and adds there are some things he should know about Jane, like women like her and Amanda are about appearances, so they change their dudes to conform to their worlds. For instance, it would not surprise Sydney to hear that Jane had already tried to change the way Jake dresses. And this one seems to hit home. You can see in the visual aids his reaction to he's like, oh, right. But he just says Sydney may be a little biased, and she leaves, and Jake reflects. Sometime later, Jake and Jane get back to the complex in formal wear from some event he apparently didn't really enjoy but was a good sport about. What was this? Like, where were they? We never find out. We hear there was an ice sculpture. Like, what was this thing? It's so weird.
Yeah. Were they in Vegas again, attending a wedding? Like, the whole thing is very weird. And I think there was a scene that got cut.
Yeah,
in that which could Jane be. Was like, you would look good in a tux. Mm-hmm. I will also add, I don't think he always looks great, but
he does.
There isn't that like tux upgrade. The proportion of tux upgrade is not as high, if that makes any sense, uh-huh. with Jake.
That's true. Which is surprising considering the rest of the time he's in like size 59 jeans and pants and stuff. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem is that the tuxedo in question is a 90s three bedroom and was not fitted particularly well to yeah. Mr. Show. So
true. Anyway, as she loosens his bow tie, Jane and her incredible side boob, by the way, I was like transfixed by it. You can see it in the visual aids because I was like, damn, not at my best did I have a side boob like that. Congratulations, madam.
Yeah, really. I was just doing the visual aids earlier and was like, oh, Tara, like, who cares? And then I, too, became ensorcelled by the boob of side. It's true.
Yeah.
Check him out.
Anyway, tells him that tuxedos really work for him, as discussed. Mm. I mean, your mileage may vary. And when he returns the compliment on her look, they start kissing, totally out in the open as though Sydney does not exist and is not just standing in her apartment window spying on them, which she is, through the Venetian blinds, as you can see in the visual aids as well, because I made a GIF. Later, Jane is inside taking her shoes off when Sydney comes by to try to harness the horse that's already out of the barn. Clip two.
Hey, Sid, what's up?
Not much. Only that I have a major problem with your dating Jake. Date anyone else in the world and I won't give a rat's ass, just not him. Are you staking some kind of claim? If you want things to stay good between us, Jane, you'll stop. You know, Sid, we really need to get past this sort of thing. We're sisters. This isn't about a competition between us. You're right. It isn't. It's about my finally finding someone who's good for me, and you're bulldozing right at the top of it. This is ridiculous. God. Look, if Joe can handle us going out, you should be able to. I mean, how long were you and Jake together? 10 minutes? It doesn't matter how long. I'm in love with him. In fact, he's the love of my life. Well, I have no intention of not seeing Jake just because you live in some one-sided fantasy world about him. It's not one-sided. Well, I'm not going to stand here and argue the point. If that's what you need to think to get through the night, knock yourself out. I'm going to bed. Jane, just remember one thing. All's fair in love and war. This will definitely be war.
Oh, no.
I thought only the piano was sad, but the guitar was angry also.
Yeah. Wow. The music act out cues in this episode are like really out of control.
Yeah.
It's very funny. But
man.
I'm usually not on Jane's side, but she's right. Like, they truly were only dating for a second.
On the other hand, I also kind of feel like amongst siblings, that's like not
true.
How would you do it?
No, it's true. But yeah. Especially and if your sibling is Sydney, you know,
well, like, yeah, that's the other thing that it's like, would you still even be attracted to someone who was attracted to Sydney after everything that's gone on?
Yeah, true. Good point.
Ask Chris in his new advice column that he writes from the Nevada desert.
So sometime later, Jane and Jake are wrapping up dinner and apparently on their way to their first boon. But while they're still only kissing, Sydney calls from a bar called the Palomino to say her car broke down. Actually, never mind. Some guys there said they'll help her. And Jake stops then, telling Jane that's not the kind of place where you talk to strangers. And he picks up the phone, telling Sydney to stay there and not talk to anyone, although she actually seems fine and is holding court there when someone I at first thought was Stephen First from Animal House and St. Elsewhere, but is in fact Brad Grunberg, as in Greg's brother, takes the stage. Oh, my God.
Once you see it, it's like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you shall in the visual aids, of course. Anyway, he is there to announce it's time for the black bra contest because it's that kind of a place.
Yeah.
And Cal, the guy who's been chatting Sydney up, urges her to enter. And when she declines, saying she's not qualified, he acts like she means she's not wearing a black bra and tries to sneak a peek. She slaps his hands away and realizes all at once she has misjudged the situation when Cal and his buddy both grab and drag her up on stage and no one else intervenes to help her. But fortunately, that is when Jake walks in and plucks her off stage just as she was about to win, by the way. And outside scolds her for being stupid and so on. She lets him because she has low self-esteem. It's Sydney. It's the flip side of it's Billy. It's like, oh, it's Sydney. Sydney,
oh, Sydney.
Girl, love yourself more.
Please.
Yes. Please. But they've just gotten on his bike when Cal and Pal come out yelling at Jake for absconding with Cal's girl. I'm paraphrasing. Jake tries to get them out of there. Cal wants to fight and does, although he only gets Jake to punch back after he calls Sydney a tramp. Oh, Jake. The next morning, Jane comes by Jake's to check on him since he never went back to her place the previous night, and she tries to be casual but admits she was worried, and he briefly recaps,
leave it to the professionals.
What happened when he got to the bar, and she's dismayed that he got himself hurt defending Sydney's honor, and then he has to deal with the other Andrews sister's insecurities. Clip three.
Come on, this is about Sid being Sid, and it's getting her into trouble like she always does. You know that.
Yeah, I do know that. But that's the difference between us, Jake, is that I don't participate in her little charades anymore.
She was in a jam. I helped her out. It was as simple as that.
Look,
This is going to be too complicated for me. I mean, Sydney's my sister. And I really want things to work out between us. But it's obvious to me that you still have unresolved feelings toward her.
That's ridiculous.
And since that is the case, I don't think that we should be dating.
Jane, I think you're making a much bigger deal out of this than you need to.
Even if there is a sliver of truth to what I'm saying, I'm not prepared to get involved with you, Jake.
That sounds damn near an ultimatum.
It is.
Well, to be honest with you, that's something I'm not prepared to deal with.
Fine. So we won't.
Fine.
A guitar has feelings.
Oh my God. In this famously visual medium of podcasting, you all are missing out on Tara's air guitar. I got to see it. Neater.
Yeah. You would think Jake would take advantage of watching Jane's butt walk away one last time, but he respectfully, pointedly does not look, as you can also see in the visual aids.
Like, yeah. I also found, like, when she got to, I don't participate in her little charades anymore. I was like, okay, like, yeah. I have no sort of sympathy for you because, yes, you do.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, every time. And then you're like, this is it. No more. Like, this is a soap. So I don't believe you.
Right. You've done this cycle 5,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only season 3. Like, come on. Anyway, that night, Sydney comes by Jake's to apologize and say she knows they should just be friends. But she's also brought steak for his face and steak to eat, plus a 6-pack. And Jake is like, sounds great. Thanks. Bye. And hustles her out before she can argue.
Yeah.
And he's put the steak on his cheek, although still in plastic. Not sure how much good that'll do when the sisters cross paths in the courtyard and the claws come out. Clip 4.
Just be tasteful for once and don't say a word.
Oh, I wasn't going to say much. Just that I brought Jake over some dinner for 2. Sorry you can't join us, but he needs to take it easy after that fight he got into over me.
You know, so just when I think you've bottomed out, you always manage to outdo yourself. The Palomino, real classy.
Jake didn't seem to mind it.
And you can stop trying to make me jealous. We're not seeing each other anymore. But I want you to know that I ended it because it was the right thing to do for me.
Sure, Jane, whatever. But did you really think you ever had a chance with him? I mean, well, you may design clothes with sex appeal, but you don't exactly have any.
You're deranged.
And yet I don't disagree with her.
I mean, is she saying you're deranged because she doesn't design clothes with sex appeal?
Also a worthy interpretation. I said corrected.
Anyway, that's the end of that. For now, maybe forever. On to our A plot. A stunning amount of drama surrounds this advertising awards dinner. Seriously, Michael is at his locker when he notices Kimberly looming behind him. He is full of excuses for why he came straight from the airport to the hospital without calling her, none of which she appears to buy. She also lets him know she knows he and Amanda shared a hotel room in New York, but of course he turns her implication around on her, ascribing her suspicions to her insecurities and blustering about how unethical it would be for anything to happen between him and Amanda. Plus, Amanda has cancer, so he's sure the last thing on her mind is sex. Yeah, you would think. That's what we said. But fine.
Especially sex with you. But I mean, there is a certain nihilistic take, I guess.
True. Like, if this is my last day on Earth, I guess I might as well fuck Michael. I don't know.
I'm only in the biggest, most densely populated city in America. Who else would possibly fuck me? I look exactly like Heather Locklear, ?
Yeah, not just Heather Locklear, but Heather Locklear 95. Like, come on now.
Yeah, the Locklear-iest. Sure.
Honestly. Anyway, Kimberly claims she will take his word for it this time. But if she finds out he's lying, he's fucked. And Michael's like, whatever. So cut to Amanda and her extremely weird suit at home.
Oh, God.
Can we talk about this suit for a second?
How is this within our powers to describe?
Okay.
Let's find out.
It's it's periwinkle to start with.
The mood is periwinkle. Yes.
The lapels are 15 feet wide.
Mm-hmm. And velour.
I was going to say crushed velvet, but yes, that's the vibe. One or the mm-hmm. other. Or yes. Possibly both. Layered. Yeah. Who knows? It's so ugly and wrong.
I think there's also some quilting on the sleeve.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
And then the matching skirt, as usual, with like everyone's skirt suits on the show at this time, is like if you laid it on your bed, it would be a rectangle, like widthwise. Because it's, I'm going to say 13 inches long.
It's so short. So short. Anyway.
I mean, she almost gets away with the suit, too, which is a testament to the Locke Learyness in play right now.
It's true. So this is what she's wearing at home when she picks up the phone to a call from Kimberly ordering Amanda to keep her claws out of Kimberly's husband. Clip 5.
Oh, look. No, you look. I don't give a damn how sick you are. Michael is off limits to you for anything but professional purposes. Now, I am sorry that you don't have a friend in the world, but if you need your hand held, I suggest you dial 1-800-GET-YOUR-OWN-MAN.
Not your best.
No. Yeah.
As fuck off lines go,
yeah.
Too many letters for one thing.
Yeah, so many, too many. We expect better from Dr. Shaw, frankly, at this point in her storied career. I will say, let me just like put this marker down for the next handful of episodes. Mm-hmm. Kimberly is being, or Marcia Cross is being asked to play stuff that even for someone with a known traumatic brain injury is not... Like, it's not playable. Like, it's not believable that she would buy his shit sometimes and then not other times, or that she's crafty enough to do certain things but then can't figure out that he's lying.
Yep.
She's doing the absolute best she can, and it is a pleasure to watch while also being super frustrating.
Also, I mean, ultimately, like, why does she, why him? Like, why does she care so much about keeping him? He's not good.
No.
Like, I mean,
if the issue is like the beach house lease, then maybe I could understand it. Maybe. Real estate complicates these calculations. I get it. But
it does. It does. But like, I mean, my personal feelings about Michael Mancini aside, and they are complicated. We have talked about them a bunch.
I was going to say, it does sound like maybe they have devolved somewhat if you're like him.
No, they haven't. This just all comes back to the same thing, which is like, how good is the dick with Michael that she's like working this hard to keep him when he's clearly like playing her and she on some level knows it. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Anyway. Then we're in the post-credits credits, which chillingly include the name of one Mr. Chuck Woolery, which I did not approve, and also Sound Like This, which Sarah did not approve, clip Mm-mm. 6.
This sounds like Miami Vice, and actually it sounds, listening to it back, alas, it sounds a lot like the credits of Bosch,
oh,
and
no.
I still don't approve. Yeah, no good.
Yeah, I assume that was a pop song at some point, but no idea what it was. Now it's this. Yuck.
Whatever. Anywho, that is.
Then we're in Amanda's hospital room where she is charging hard again. Michael enters to scold her and snatch away her cellular phone, which she has apparently acquired since she got back from New York. She complains that it's the only way to stay on top of shit at the office. And Michael's there with an oncologist who backs up Michael's decision to confiscate said phone because her blood pressure's up. And if she can't take leave from work, she should at least take a few days off. Michael's already booked a weekend at this resort in Santa Barbara. She says she absolutely cannot go. There's an advertising award ceremony on Saturday that she's not going to miss since she expects to win. And when the oncologist leaves, she hisses at Michael that they're not going away together. And he claims he doesn't intend any funny business and will get her back in time for the awards. She, for some reason, says she'll think about it. Mm. over to the lounge where Michael's trying to sell Kimberly on the idea that he's going to Santa Barbara to work. I have, by the way, 5 million questions about the magazine photo someone cut out of, like, YM and stuck to the outside of their locker in the lounge. You can see this in the visual aids. It's, like, clearly a teenage girl with, like, socks up to her knees and, like, pigtails. I think it's very, certainly from a teen magazine.
Yeah, it's, like, 17, sort of, like, get the skater look without getting inline skates. Right. Like, yay. But yeah, I mean, and I feel like there was something written underneath it that probably was like an in-joke with the crew, but we'll never know.
It's still there in the next episode, too. Like, it's very weird. I don't know what that's about. But anyway.
Yeah.
The claim is that Michael had lunch with a personnel guy in Santa Barbara who offered him a weekend slot. They're short on residence. They're going to pay him crazy money, like so good he might be working weekends for a while. Mm-hmm. And all the extra money is for a trip to Maui, which he happens to have a brochure for at the ready. It'll be the honeymoon they never had. And somehow, to go back to our earlier, how does this shit working on her? It works, or seems to. Over to D&D, where Allison and Billy are so busy congratulating themselves that they accidentally talk themselves into revealing something they totally could have kept to themselves. Ray, the fuck up with Franklin. Although Amanda is in the bad periwinkle suit, which is not what she was wearing. Like, there's a, you can see in the visual aids that I track, like, the outfit discontinuity, because they, this was put together in some weird order. But anyway, here's what happens. Clip 7.
I see you two finally decide to grace us with your presence.
Yes, and you'll be glad to know that through some brilliant maneuvering, we effectively saved the Franklin Cruise Lines account.
What do you mean, saved? Correct me if I'm wrong, but Franklin was perfectly stable when I left.
The only reason the account became a problem is because you didn't leave us with a solid enough campaign in the first place. Allison managed to turn it around and hit it out of the park.
Well, you may have landed on your feet with that account, but everything else around here went to pot in the process, especially these quarterly reports. I want them updated and on my desk Monday morning. Oh, and by the way, did you submit my entry form to the Century Advertising Awards?
No, with this whole situation.
You know, Allison, for every solid catch, there's a pathetic fumble. The Century Awards are the biggest advertising event of the year, and you can't even manage to mail off an entry form? The deadline's tomorrow.
I know. I was going to have it messengered over.
Not good enough. Take it there personally.
Amanda, their offices are somewhere in Long Beach.
Well, you better fill up your tank. And while you're there, let it slip that I'm very ill. If there was ever a year I needed to win, this is it.
I have a few questions.
Please.
May I?
Yes.
First of all, when last we saw the Franklin account, hadn't all business been pulled?
Yes, with a formal, like, severance letter.
Okay. I mean, not that I necessarily needed to see them winning it back, because the less we see of their actual advertising output, the better. It's
true.
The punchline rule. Don't show the comedy.
Yep.
Another question. Why are creatives doing quarterly reports? Like, I just love how this show is just like, we're at D&D and we need to do business.
Yes.
Business. Ginger, blah, blah, ginger. Like, okay. I don't get it.
Also, Amanda said this awards dinner was Saturday, as in, like, this week. So the deadline for submissions is not going to be the week of the awards. It would have been like months ago.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
No, it isn't.
Regardless.
But here we all are.
Yes. Allison goes to this office in Long Beach, also on a totally other day because she's in a different outfit too, with the paperwork for this submission, where a pretty moderately crazy-eyed brunette who looks exactly like Charlotte York asks if she can help. Allison introduces herself, says she hopes the submission of D&D isn't too late, and the brunette says it's fine and introduces herself as Brooke Armstrong. No need to remember it. Probably just a one-off. JK. As Brooke flips through the papers, she asks where Glorious Gowns is. Wasn't that Allison's account? And Allison says it's not being entered because Amanda is going to be representing the agency in the print category. And then adds, Not that this should influence anything. Of course, that Amanda happens to be very ill right now. So, and Brooke doesn't even really seem to register that.
No, like, she doesn't.
Does not care.
Nope.
Telling Allison that she should submit Gloria's gowns. And Allison is not comfortable with that, but Brooke hard sells her. She knows everyone on the awards committee, and Gloria's gowns was one of last year's best campaigns. Allison
it
deserves-
wasn't.
How could it be? But Allison no. deserves at least a mention for it. And Allison is finally convinced by the argument that it's only for a nomination and giddily sits down to fill out the illicit papers.
No, Allison, you bonehead.
You fucking idiot. So then Brooke asks if she could take Allison out for lunch sometime about getting back into a top ad agency. Talking to someone at Allison's level is just the ticket. Like, what is Allison's level?
Business, business, business.
Dipshit, dipshit, dipshit. Allison agrees.
Yes.
And when Brooke notes that she has Allison's number right on the form, Allison instantly seems to understand that she's made a huge mistake, but it's too late. And so then back at the office, Amanda calls Allison and Billy in to see her back in the blouse she had on in the cold open or after yeah. when she was at the hospital. So, again, outfit discontinuity. To say yep, she's going to be out of the office again over. Tomorrow. She's taking an R&R day and will probably work from home next week, which means trusting them to take the reins in her absence, and she does not feel great about it. Hire someone experienced to supervise them, then. Jesus Christ. Like, you're in charge. This is part of your job.
Yeah. Also, Caitlin was a total grifter, but she appeared to be fairly good at this part.
She actually was. Like, that's the crazy part.
Yeah. Go out to the halfway cafe. Tell her, look, I know you got your t-shirt stall and everything, but we need you.
Anyway, Amanda gives them instructions, including where she'll be in Santa Barbara, and that they'll talk about their new duties next week. Allison wants to talk about this resort, but Amanda shuts that down, says she'll hope they'll work better as a team than they did as a couple, which, like, we already have evidence. They're a disaster professionally, so why are they getting another chance? Because it's a soap and, you know, they can't afford to hire anyone else.
Yeah.
That night, Allison and Billy are at her place working and bitching. Allison assumes Amanda's just planning to work them until they drop, but Billy's hopeful she's finally figured out she needs to slow down and acknowledge her health limitations. And then they start feeding each other Chinese food, which turns into making out. And we're here again.
It's Billy.
It's still Billy.
Yeah.
It's still Billy. Then it's the next day. Michael and Amanda are being led into their lavish suite at the resort where Amanda has apparently been before. By the way, Amanda's outfit has like head to toe come back in style, like from the dorky Seinfeld sneakers to the style of jean to the sweater. She's like exactly every cool teen on TikTok now. It's very funny how fashion
yeah, also
works.
If you go to gap.com, that's absolutely what they're, that's like transition away from Zoom calls. Like, okay, well,
yep.
Nah. I will also note that Amanda has definitely been to this resort before, because so have we, because I remember the Mercedes from the B-roll back in the Steve era of Allison's quote love, quote life. You've been to this resort before.
Good eye, Sarah. So
thanks.
Amanda wants to know what Michael told Kimberly. He shrugs. He didn't have to say much since the relationship's been on the wane for a while. Kimberly's obsessed with having kids and he's not, so she is backed off emotionally. He needs an equal in marriage, someone as career focused as he is. And noncommittally, Amanda says that's rare in a man. And then he puts his hands on her face and kisses her, but she stops and reminds him this trip was supposed to be strictly professional. How? Like,
LOL.
Did he bring chemo gear to this resort?
Like, what?
In L.A., Allison tells Billy she's on her way out for a lunch with Brooke and about how Brooke talked her into submitting the Glorious Gowns campaign, and Billy's about it, kind of, clipping.
On paper.
Oh, that's great. You really deserve congrats for that campaign.
It's Billy, and it's Andrew Hsu, but the fact that you can barely hear the line of dialogue at all, like it just sounds, you could almost hear the boom mic like swinging over to pick up this line of dialogue because he is such a flat line. Yep. Amazing.
Yes. Like, I can't tell if it's that, as we always say, you know, they were shooting 15 episodes this week, or like if he just was replaying soccer games in his mind, like he just was not there present on the set. Like, he was on the show the whole time. Yeah. But he just seems so checked out.
Yeah. Or like that he just has two or two and a half modes.
Right.
And occasionally it's appropriate for the scene, and occasionally it's so inappropriate for the scene that it's hilariously awesome.
It's true.
Most of the time it's just like, what is, like, I would say, what is being attempted here? Nothing is being attempted. He's like, well, second gear, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. So even though Allison just said she's on her way out, she also pauses to say that what happened between them last night was because of the familiarity of the environment. So to prove her wrong, Billy kisses her in the middle of the bullpen and tells her to psychoanalyze that one. And she's like, I gotta go.
They didn't talk about this until lunch the next day.
Yeah, right.
Sure. They yeah. were gonna get married. He did an intervention on her. But why would we have this conversation until cameras are present 36 hours or 18 hours later?
Okay. Yeah, here's something else I've never thought about until this second. Like, they work at the same place and they live in the same complex. Like, do they carpool? Because they should.
Yeah. And they should talk about this stuff in the car.
In the car.
Dash cam. Get the knack.
Yep. Anyway, over to lunch, where Brooke is telling Allison she was a rising star at an agency that went under right before she was supposed to get a promotion. Mm-hmm. But it would not have worked out anyway, since there was an older account executive there who had it in for her. Sounds familiar. Mm. Brooke asks whether Allison has found there are a lot of women who don't help each other out in the business. And Allison says some women don't see each other as teammates rather than competitors. Mm. And then tells Brooke about a 3-day-a-week intern job that's about to open up at D&D, and Brooke is super psyched about it.
Because business, 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 and apparently Allison is a hiring manager as well.
Yeah.
Rumors many hats at D&D.
Yeah, and being a 3-day-a-week intern at D&D is like, this is how you move up in this industry versus being the coordinator of this advertising.
Yeah, no, stay put.
Dumb.
Yeah.
At the hospital, Matt asks someone at a desk to page Michael, but Kimberly, standing nearby, breezily says not to bother. He's unavailable. And then comes over to needle Matt about Rawlings, which, like, was held at gunpoint, bitch. Like, come on.
Yeah, really.
So mean. He needles her back about Michael, and she repeats the cover story about Michael working a weekend shift at the hospital in Santa Barbara for extra cash, and Matt is immediately dubious about this tale for good reason. Clip 9.
Kimberly, we used to have a deal with that hospital where they'd borrow residents for rotating weekends, but it was putting too much stress on the participants.
Oh, is that so?
Don't flip your wig, but that program is discontinued. About a year ago.
Almost choking on his glee. Love it. So good.
What a bitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, both of them, but she deserved that for the Rawlings cracks, honestly.
Oh, yeah, she did.
At the office, Allison reviews Joe's latest work and then takes like half a question about where Amanda is to spill about her cancer. Loosest lips in the business. Jesus Christ, Allison.
She's terrible.
While Joe is absorbing this, obviously Kimberly, with an English accent, calls posing as Amanda's oncologist's assistant. It's like, could not be more obvious. Like, you've talked to this woman a lot.
Yeah.
But Allison says she's out of town, but since it's her oncologist's assistant, of course Allison will pass on where she is. And at the ranch, Michael and Amanda are relaxing in their hot tub in their suite. She comments on how easy it is to depend on him, and he thinks it's because they're so much alike, basically self-interested. Okay, yes.
I mean, it's a take.
It is. I get it, kind of.
Yeah, kind of falls apart if you take it too far, but he won't.
Right.
With this anyway.
Yes, but he, you know, self-interested until now, because now he wants to take care of her, and she almost believes him. And they're kissing when they hear the door. Michael assumes it's room service, but it's not. It's Kimberly brandishing a floor lamp. Clip 10.
Give me a reason not to drop this in.
How did you get in here?
I am Mrs. Michael Mancini.
Now calm down, babe. This is not what you think.
How stupid do you think I am, Michael?
All right, put the lamp down, please. Come on now, put the lamp down.
You are a spineless fraud.
Paul, where do you think you're going?
Now let's stay calm here, okay? Whoa!
Look at you. You're a selfish, philandering, dripping, wet bastard. That I'd want you at all is amazing.
This was simply a medical treatment for Amanda, and the fact that you interrupted it is seriously affecting her health.
Don't give me that crap, Michael. I'm a doctor.
Look, all I'm saying is that this could be explained, all right? Maybe not now, later. In fact, you know what? It would be great. Go home, wait for me there, and then after our head's clear, we'll talk.
Oh, I'm leaving, all right, but not because you're telling me to. Seeing the two of you together has made me sick to my stomach.
You have no idea how close that was.
I don't know how you managed to make me forget that you're a pathological liar, but you did.
Amanda, I can explain it.
Not interested. These days, I have no tolerance for liars. Life is too short, especially mine.
I loved it. The reveal of, like, the crazy music cue when they cut to Kimberly with the lamp. It's like, it's so good.
I mean, yes. And Marcia Cross plays it perfectly. I mean, I want to be enjoying this plot line, but it requires both Kimberly and Amanda to be boneheads who were born literally yesterday. So
yes,
it's hard to, it's hard to just enjoy the ride, but Marcia Cross is killing it, as always.
It's true. Yes. I mean, this is what was so fun about the end of season two, was that, like, it brought Kimberly and Sydney together to try to take down Michael.
Right.
Which is, like, what he deserved. Like, that's what should have happened. I mean, not that I wanted Michael off the show because he's such a fun character to hate.
Yeah.
But it made sense for the two of them to be allies in the fight against him,
you know?
Anyway, the next morning, Amanda goes straight to Allison's door to yell at her. Clip 11.
Amanda,
are you totally incompetent or are you just out to get me?
No, of course not.
Then explain to me how Kimberly Shaw found out I was at the Royal Canyon.
I have no idea. The only person I gave that information to was the nurse at your doctor's office. Amanda, if I upset your trip, it was completely unintentional. I thought I was helping you.
Well, as usual, you were wrong. What was supposed to be a retreat from the harsh realities of my life turned into a sordid nightmare.
I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. Just tell me you didn't botch tonight's limo arrangements for the Century Awards. No, it's all taken care of. Well, at least you're not totally useless. Amanda, I know you're in a bad place right now because of your illness, but I want you to know that despite all we've been through personally and professionally, I do intend to be there for you at work. I won't screw you over. You have my word.
See, I'm so stupid. I thought when she was like, Amanda, it was going to be like, oh, by the way, I was talked into submitting my name.
Yeah.
But no, she's just that dumb.
She's just that dumb. And I mean, I don't understand why Amanda also trusts Allison to do anything correctly. That it's like, I take it you didn't screw up the limo arrangements. My next move is to go upstairs and call the limo company myself.
Right. Also, like, doesn't Amanda have an assistant who would handle this shit for her? Like, that's assistant work.
Yeah. Why are creatives arranging for limousines?
Business, business, business,
business, business, business, business.
I mean, not to say anything is beneath Allison, because, you know, but this really is not her job. This is what assistants do.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, So Kimberly is in bed crying when Michael gets home. He claims he spent the night alone in Santa Barbara to give Kimberly some space. LOL. But he wants to explain. And here's the story he spent all night crafting. Amanda's scared of death, so she became fixated on him. He admits he participated, but only because he believed if he rejected her, it could have jeopardized her treatment. By the way, I forgot to say, to back up, when Kimberly was there with the lamp, she's like, this is Amanda's treatment. They're sitting in the hot tub together like, it's not fucking sports medicine. She has cancer. Like, yeah. What are you treating in a hot tub?
Yeah. Also, why does your shirt have to be off if that's the case?
Anyway, he's going to tell Amanda tonight to let go of her fantasies, and Kimberly burbles at him to do what he has to do, and Michael thanks her for being understanding and is about to leave when... Clip 12.
Michael. I know all your faults. Like no one else does. I know you'll probably do it again in the future. I know all this. And as much as I wish I didn't, I still love you. No one is ever gonna let you be as true to yourself as I have, as I will.
More than that scene deserved, seriously. Like, that was some nice, snotty crying.
I was going to say, go to the visual aids to see some impressively non-vain, ugly crying from Marsha Cross.
She's really, like, she comes to play every scene, even on this kooky dreck that is assassinating her character.
Yep. She is going for it. So sometime later... Allison comes to Amanda to check on her before the banquet. Amanda looks fab in blush. Allison looks like she is wearing a fucking coffin lining. You can see this in the visual aids. It's like up to her collarbone, down to her ankles, just black long sleeve. It's horrible.
It's, yeah, it is. I mean, even Lydia in Beetlejuice would be like, too much.
It's really horrible. So then the phone rings. Michael announces he's on his way over to be her date for the dinner. Amanda prefers to go solo. Michael knows he should have told her that Kimberly was still being so possessive. LOL. But it really is over. He's going to be there in a limo in 15 minutes. No, he won't. It'll be an hour. And he's not taking no for an answer. She's going to need someone to kiss when she wins. And as soon as she hangs up, he turns around to see Kimberly in the doorway with questions. Clip 13.
I just called Amanda and set her straight. But she reminded me of this awards deal thing. I don't know. I had agreed to a while back. But she's sworn to back off if I'll just do this one thing. You know, she couldn't find an escort.
Amanda couldn't get a date.
Well, you've seen her, babe. She's not looking that hot these days. Hey, you remember what I said? I'm with you.
And this is absolutely, positively the last time you're going to babysit her?
Uh-huh, and then I'm off the hook. Oh, gosh, I got to hit the road.
I know, because the pumpkin's out front. And it better be on her tab.
It's not.
No, no, it's not.
Also... Amanda still looks incredible. Like, you've seen the visual aids. They've barely done anything to make her look like she's the tiniest bit sick.
Yeah, occasionally they don't give her lip balm.
So then, fucking Chuck Woolery is hosting the annual Century Advertising Awards.
Why?
We join in time for the best print ad category. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Clip 14.
And the nominees are Gregory Nations, the Weiland Group for Saratoga Tools.
Your mom's a Saratoga Tool.
David Barrett, Huntley Advertising for Porter Tires. Amanda Woodward, B&B Advertising for Grandstand Electronics.
Just in case, good luck. Thank you.
And Allison Parker, D&D Advertising for Glorious Gown.
So, Amanda turns around in horror at Allison, and Allison's like, oh, fuck. So
you
then
can see and hear and smell the drawers filling with poo. It's
yep.
amazing.
And, yeah, she's horrified. Then she wins, and Brooke LOL. Takes Allison's seat and coos in Billy's ear that she knew Allison would win all along. And Andrew Hsu gives an actually funny take at her, like, okay, who are you? Which you can see in the visual aids.
And then, like, looks into her cleavage and then snaps his head back front. Like, why yeah. are you doing a bit right now? And yet it works for some reason.
It's really funny.
It like, is really funny.
Again, as usual, probably by accident, but mm-hmm. still.
Even a broken shoe. It's
we
right
have
twice
to give him credit.
You
the
do.
Rare times it happens. So then stupid Allison has to give her dumb speech. Clip 15.
I have to say, I did not expect this at all.
With good reason.
I don't have a speech written on index cards or a list of people to thank or any memory of who
Come on,
I
let's
am
go.
Or what
I'm
I do
starting
for
to feel nauseous.
starting.
Oh, I would like to thank my wonderful associate, Billy Campbell. And everyone at the graphics department at D&D, my friends who've been so supportive, and Amanda Woodward, the best in the business. Thank you.
That's it. Amanda's
business,
back.
Business, and, business.
That's Amanda's back as she's walking out. So, you know, too little, too late, but we'll see
yeah.
where this goes in
also,
the next episode.
Take your award, get in the car, drive somewhere, and change your name and become a blackjack dealer in Reno because you are dead.
Yeah. Well, you'd think, but we'll see. We'll see what happens for Allison.
We'll see, yeah. More businessing to come. Yay.
Uh-huh. So out in the hall, Amanda spirals, and this happens? Clip 16.
I can't deal with this. With losing it all at once, does everything have to be taken away from me?
No, not everything. I love you, Amanda. Like I've never loved anybody before in my life. Not Kimberly, not Jane. And you're not going to lose me. I promise you that.
Don't threaten me.
Well,
I'm like bed bugs, baby.
And then they hug, and that's the end. It's real weird. So let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Sarah, what do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I want to give it to Kimberly for the lamp moment, except the rest of the episode, she's so bad. So I'm just going to say Matt for Flip Your Wig, even though he's only gets one scene in this whole dumb episode. That's my pick.
I will say, my God, well, and there's so many, you know, we're just spoiled for choice with the losers. But given what we can dimly sense even here, Brooke. Because yeah. I think this is all part of the master plan, and it's happening.
I was going to say, she's making shit happen for herself. That's a good choice. Least valuable player.
I mean, either of Michael's women is a solid candidate, but I'm going to say Allison because Allison.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still going to say Kimberly because, like, figure your shit out and just find some other scumbag.
Yes.
It's LA. There are tons.
Or the halfway cafe. It's full. Yeah. Full of your people.
Go find Chris.
Someone. Anyone. Next time on Again With This, Chris is found. Just kidding. Allison tries to serve Amanda realness. Michael attempts an insurance grift so cartoonish we're surprised Tex Avery didn't get a writing credit. And cue up Mimbo number 5. It's Burger King pitchman Dan Cortez. Crown your listening experience by checking out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book, illustrated by Julie Kane, so browse over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm Glorious Gown, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Scheming Charlotte, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And you can reach our producer at 1-800-GET-YOUR-OWN-DAVID-TEAKLE. Talk to you next time.
Adios, fruitcake!